Welcome to the Shea Charlotte podcast, a vintage brand which used to be a shop and is now a show. This is where vintage meets storytelling. I'm your host, Charlotte Dallison, and each week I chat to a guest who has an enviable vintage wardrobe about their vintage clothing journey. The purpose of this podcast is to encourage more people to wear more vintage. Whether you're a vintage dabbler or devotee, there is so much to learn from these conversations. Now let's chat clothes, shall we? Claudia Chan Shaw is a designer, author, and presenter based in Sydney, Australia. She is known for her distinct deco style and in-depth knowledge regarding history and design. Her work has included curating museum shows, leading tours and talks, hosting television and radio, and more. If you're in Sydney, you can listen to her on the radio each week as she hosts Arts Friday on 89.7 FM Eastside Radio. You can buy her book, Collectomania, on Amazon now, which I will link in the show notes. She is also the daughter of Vivian Chan Shaw, famed Australian fashion designer who you may know as the Queen of Australian Knitwear. I had such a fabulous time talking to Claudia. She has so much knowledge and so many great stories and such style. I think people like Claudia showcase what innate style truly is, and I think you will garner a lot from listening to this conversation, so I hope you enjoy it. Thank you for being on this, the Shea Charlotte Vintage Podcast. Now, when I spoke to you when we were chatting beforehand, you sort of said you don't actually have that much vintage clothing per se, but you definitely have a vintage look. And I wanted to ask you how you got into sort of vintage style to begin with.
And it's interesting because when I said I didn't necessarily have a lot of vintage clothes, because I keep everything for so long, I think my entire wardrobe is now vintage. Because I grew up with a designer mother.
Yes.
So Vivian Chan Shaw, my mum, who, and we are business partners in the Vivian Chan Shaw label. I grew up surrounded by collections of clothing, and that they were all Vivian Chan Shaw designs. And from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, all the way through. And because as a designer, she kept virtually every collection, I had this amazing collection of racks and racks and racks in our office of all different decades. And I never really realized, but I was surrounded by this wonderful clothing that I kept pinching. So I really was wearing vintage from a very early age and didn't really click because I wasn't vintage shopping at that stage. So I wouldn't call them hand-me-downs, but I call them samples from the design rack.
Yes, or sort of an archive. I mean, you're very lucky. Because what year did your mother start her brand?
1972.
Right. So right from then, that's amazing.
Yeah, and there are pieces from every collection because this is a family that collects and does not get rid of anything.
Do you have any other siblings?
Yes, I have a couple of brothers.
Oh, right.
Who are not crazy collectors. They're actually, their houses are very ordered and mine's the maximalist heaven.
Oh, fabulous. And it's nice, I suppose, if you were the only daughter, you kind of had the privilege of being able to pinch from the archive, as you said, to get dressed.
Indeed.
And in terms of your own style, you obviously have a sort of, well, you're known as having this art deco part of like your brand and your work, even in the way you present. So how did that come about? And when did you sort of start styling yourself in that way?
I have always been in love with movies from the 30s and 40s.
Right.
I grew up in love with Humphrey Bogart. So when you're Humphrey Bogart, of course, you love Ingrid Bergman, you love Lauren Bacall, you love Jean Tierney and all the wonderful stars. And so what I loved and related to in popular culture was never from this era. The music I loved was Artie Shaw playing the clarinet,
yes,
or something like that. So I wasn't really living on this planet in terms of the music and the films and popular culture that I was interested in. I just always loved a 1920s look. Louise Brooks is a beautiful influence. And with the bobbed hair, which people say to me, do you ever change your hair? Well, yes. I have had long straight hair and I have had spiky hair.
Wow.
But the bob stuck. And I can remember my mother and I were in New York sitting in the lobby of the Plaza Hotel having afternoon tea because we spend a lot of time in the United States because we were exporting our fashion label to America and had an agent in New York.
Right.
We're sitting there having afternoon tea and I look across and there's this woman with short black bobbed hair and she's serving us. And I said to Mum, when I'm 30, I'm going to have that hairdo. Well, I was in my mid-20s at the time, and I'm a couple of years, but I couldn't wait till I was 30. So about 27, chopped off the long hair and got the bob. It has gone up and down from short and spiky back into the bob, but the bob stays now.
Oh, it's so gorgeous, and it's very, you know, synonymous with you and your look and you wear it so well. I think it would be hard to pull off. I don't think I would suit that, put it that way, but it looks gorgeous. The next thing I was going to ask is, with your personal style today, how do you sort of incorporate vintage into it? It sounds like you have quite a like set sense of style, but do you consciously incorporate vintage into it, or is it just a matter of the fact that your wardrobe is predominantly vintage at this point? Do you sort of mix it in consciously or do you just go with the flow? How do you incorporate it?
It depends. Sometimes if I'm doing a talk, for instance, you would have seen me talking at the Museum of Sydney, I was wearing a vintage Chinese embroidered coat.
Yes.
White with black embroidery. And that was obviously chosen for the theme of that talk, looking back in time at bad people from the 1920s. and I mix it up with, you know, my normal wardrobe. I have the most amazing 1920s cloche hat, for instance.
Wow.
Which I'll wear with a contemporary jacket and wear it to the theatre just because it's a great looking hat. My husband always says to me, you've got so many fantastic hats, why don't you wear them all the time? So I'm like, oh, hat hair.
I know, I can relate to that. That is the problem with vintage hats, I think. They're so, you know, you just want them when you see them and you kind of, they're so irresistible.
Yeah.
I've accumulated a lot myself and I never wear them, but they're kind of like just objects.
Beautiful objects. And also I don't think the vintage has to look like you're in costume.
No.
I think beautiful piece, whether it's a gorgeous wrap or it's a great handbag, or a beautiful top, like often I'll wear 1970s Vivienne Chanshaw top with Jean-Paul Gaultier pants and a Sergio Rossi boot, all from different eras. Most of my shoes are 1980s.
Really?
They're still hanging in there and I just have them repaired because I just like the style from them. I often go shoe shopping these days and go, I'm in despair because I like a little shoe boot look. I like a closed-in shoe generally.
Yes.
And I find it very difficult to buy vintage shoes because they're usually tiny.
Yes.
And they just don't work for me.
Right. So it's literally your collection rather than shopping for 80s shoes per se.
Yes, yes. If I'm vintage shopping, I'm looking for pieces that are outstanding, usually accessories, an amazing beaded Hong Kong cardigan, you know, from the 60s, but still timeless. It doesn't necessarily scream the era, but it can be just worked into a normal wardrobe. And as I say, most of my things are so old anyway, because I never move on. I'm not a trader. I'm a keeper.
Yes. Well, it's interesting you say that as well, because the purpose of this podcast and rebranding my vintage brand into kind of media brand is to show people who are perhaps more on the fence that in order to wear a lot of vintage, you don't have to look like you're an extra from a period film or look like you're a certain era. And also I think there are some vintage devotees who are very strict, which is great. And we learn from them, but realistically you want to infuse your own style and also look contemporary as well. And I think that's the sort of irony almost with vintage clothing. You can actually look more modern in a funny sort of way.
Yeah, we're mixing it up.
Yeah. So have you had any specific vintage phases or have you always stuck to one look? And you've obviously already sort of touched on this with the hair, but it sounds like you've been wearing consistently Vivienne Chanshaw throughout your entire life. But have you, I mean, you talked about spiky hair before. Tell me more about that and sort of your phases.
Mm. So I was an art college student, Sydney College of the Arts, and it's the 80s.
Yes.
Leather, lots and lots of leather. And I still love leather. I still have a wardrobe full of black leather. In the day, My mother had not one of her designs, but I can't remember the label, a bright green, think of a green tree frog, leather dress with a big zipper down the front with a very sticky outy collar. And I used to wear that dancing in the 80s.
Oh, mad.
And then she had the most amazing black leather jumpsuit with a zipper that went all the way up, asymmetric on one side. And it was so tough, but so chic. It wasn't bikey girl. It was glamazon, watch out, she's strong.
Wow.
I used to steal that from her in the 80s, and it's still somewhere on one of the racks. We still have it somewhere. I still have a radar for black leather. I love a classic black leather jacket, but with a bit of an edge. I have a black leather jacket from when I turned 30, which is a while ago, and my husband calls it my Jiminy Cricket jacket because of these long tails at the back. Whatever the piece is, needs to be a little edgy. It needs to be different. I don't like to look like other people. I wear a lot of Izzy Miyake.
Oh.
I'm wearing Izzy Miyake today, and this is almost 30 years old, this top. They just don't date. They're still wonderful. And because they're that soft, almost one size idea, they just keep working with you.
Wow.
Which, you know, when you change, they're always there. Back in college days also, I went through a stage where I dressed like a little boy.
Oh, okay.
With short spiky hair, I had little boy hats, and I would wear braces and high-waisted pants and stripy shirts. And then I went through a stage where everything I wore was spotted because I went through a Roy Lichtenstein stage, like a Lichtenstein painting. So in the 80s, I was still doing my own very individual look. It's sort of like, you know, who's the boy girl over there? But and little boots with the high-waisted pants. So almost like 1940s man style, but in 1980s feel.
Yes. Well, I think it's funny you say that because I think within us, we always have like these archetypes almost that we veer towards. And it sounds like you definitely had very distinct archetypes throughout your like experimental years. Did you sort of want to dress like your mother, or did you want a sense of your own style, or was it sort of not really a thought?
Obviously, we worked together. We go overseas together on selling trips. We'd go to functions together. We'd always be wearing Vivian Chanshaw.
Yes.
But we didn't look like the Bobsey twins. It was just, there are the designers. They are wearing what they wear. We never looked alike in that way. We wore different clothing, obviously. We didn't dress as twins.
Yes.
And I didn't necessarily want to look like her and wear what she wore, because in terms of the jewelry she wore, it was all too much for me. She'd wear chains and chains and chains all together, and she'd clink and jink when she walked.
Wow.
I admired and thought looked fantastic, but that was not me. And she used to say to me, "You're more conservative than me, Claudia."
Really? Oh my God.
That was a long time ago, though. So I didn't necessarily want to be a little version of her, but there were things that she had, standout pieces in her wardrobe, that I just wanted to steal.
Yes.
Like that leather jumpsuit, like that leather dress. And she was always, and still is. She's turning 88 this year.
Wow.
And she's the coolest woman you ever saw, you know, like black over the knee boots on an 88-year-old that do not look like she's trying too hard. They just look right.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it must have been so fabulous growing up with innately stylish mother as your caretaker and your kind of style icon in one.
Yes. You either go towards the light or you go away from it.
Absolutely.
With her being this incredibly stylish woman, you want to be stylish too, but do your own version of it. And I can remember saying to her when I was little, oh, all the girls at school have got blah, blah, JC sandals or whatever. And she said to me, "Why would you ever want to look like anybody else?"
That is such a good piece of advice.
It is. It's stuck with me. Why would I want to look like anybody else? So do your own thing.
Yeah, that's like the perfect piece of advice for this audience. So thank you for saying that. Back to shopping. Do you have like a most memorable vintage clothing or vintage accessory purchase?
Yes, a couple. Jean-Paul Gaultier dress.
Amazing.
Paris, wearing my mum, and we've had lunch. And I go, doo, 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 doo. Ooh, interesting shop, and walk in, and hanging, just hanging on the wall, is a fantastic Gaultier dress, which is, it's mesh, because I have quite a number of his mesh long sleeve tops. I'm quite a Gaultier fan. And looking at it hanging there, I thought, that'll work for me. I don't think it fits me anymore because it was very tubey. €25.
Oh, wow. That is a steal.
And I thought, I'm in Paris. Are you kidding? Do you not realize what's hanging on the wall here?
Oh, my God.
And then I love the marché aux puces, the enormous flea markets at Clignancourt. And I found these amazing, I think they're 1930s sunglasses that have got black lenses and they're in the shape of a diamond.
Oh, cool.
Beautiful diamond-shaped lenses. And going through the shop that day, there were all these, it felt like new old stock. So somebody had got hold of this fantastic stock from an optician. And all of their sunglasses were in little Perspex boxes. So you could just pull the boxes and there were a whole wall of them. So I'm going through all these boxes and came away with the diamond-shaped lenses that were just to die for. Same trip, an amazing cherry amber 1920s bracelet that was all faceted. So it looked like Bakelite, but it was actually cherry amber.
Wow. It sounds like the fashion gods were definitely looking out for you on that Paris trip. That sounds like too good to be true.
Here are a lot of collectors saying, oh, I picked something up in the flea market, and I've had zero luck in New York flea markets.
Really?
Have never found anything that was for me.
It's hard to believe.
I know. I did find a multiple photocopied script of The Godfather that I bought.
Well, that's amazing.
Yes.
But it's a different kind of amazing. You can't wear a script, can you?
No, you can't.
Now, does sustainability factor into why you buy or wear secondhand? Do you think about that? Or is it just sort of a cherry on top?
Yeah, it's a bonus. It's not the primary reason that I look for something. I look for something because I want something different and special.
Yeah.
It's a bonus that it is sustainable. And when I look at my own wardrobe, and my husband and I don't have any kids, and we have, let me see, three wardrobes in the house, and he's also a bit of loves his clothes, and the wardrobes are absolutely packed. It's not ideal for, you know, airing your clothes and things like that, so you've got to take them out and air them.
I understand that.
Honestly, we'll go to the wardrobe and pull out something. I said to him the other day, you realize how old this is, what I'm wearing tonight? We have sustainability living in that wardrobe.
Wow.
So we're practicing that without consciously making the decision to, you know, not buy chain store or things like that. That's just the way it turned out.
It's sort of good to touch on that because I think with the sustainability story at the moment, and it's so important, and I definitely feel passionately about it, but I think it's nice to kind of not have that be at the forefront of your thinking when you're wearing and buying vintage, because it is very serious and it's very sad. And I think it's kind of like good to sort of be like, oh, and it's sustainable. It's so good that it's a bonus. And I think it's nice to be reminded of that it's positive and it's, you know, optimistic or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next question I have for you is, do you purchase, well, I think I know the answer to this, do you purchase vintage for any other areas of your life, i.e. decor?
Indeed, we both collect. My husband has a collection of fossils. Most of my collections are tin toys, vintage tin toys. And I have the oldest tin toy is from 1905.
Wow.
A boy on a seesaw.
Cute.
A whole collection of robots and wind up and battery operated robots. So a lot from Japan. The oldest is 1949 in the robots. There are 1950s and 60s and 70s and 80s and right through. Definitely in those collections, there are wonderful vintage stars. An Art Deco drinks tray, you know, the classic black chrome, silver chrome with the black top for the drinks tray, which doesn't have bottles on it, which has silly things on it, like little tiny pair of black Bakelite shoes and things like that.
Cute.
The house is a mixture of different things. It's not, it's a cottage that was built in 1917. So it's not a slick contemporary looking home.
Right.
I would love to live in a minimal house, but it's just not us. I like to have everything out. I want to see them. And they're in display cases. They're nicely displayed.
Oh.
There's the most amazing, 1927 kangaroo that is Art Deco Wedgwood that was designed by a designer called John Skeeping, because Wedgwood had many designers coming in and doing collections for them.
Yes.
So, and this is, it's white and it's the angular, fantastic kangaroo. That was a more recent purchase.
Yeah, I was going to ask, where on earth did you find that?
Antique fair.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So do you sort of frequent like antique fairs? I mean, it sounds like you do, but is that something you actively kind of do, or do you just sort of go to fairs as they pop up? How devoted are you in that sense?
If it falls into I've got a spare day and the blah, blah fairs on, because you get all the invitations, of course, because you know, as you would know, when anything is on in your world, you know about it.
Yes.
I'm not there every weekend seeking things out because it would be awfully expensive.
Yeah.
I don't always find something, but this was just, couldn't not take it home. And the dealer was a dealer from Queensland. The dealer said to me, you realise there's a black version of this as well. I was like, oh, go away, leave me alone.
Really? Oh, my God.
But he sent me a message from Queensland saying, there's one available now. No.
One day, I think you do need it, though.
Yeah, the match pair.
Yeah, exactly. So have you observed like changes within the vintage market since you began shopping for vintage or buying vintage? Was it sort of better 20 years ago, 30 years ago? Or what do you think sort of changed in terms of vintage shopping?
I found the most amazing vintage store in Wellington.
Yes.
In New Zealand.
I used to live there.
I think it was in Cuba Street.
It would be. Is it Hunters and Collectors?
Could be. Got a great Gaultier dress there.
Oh.
Fantastic. When I'm shopping for vintage, because not everything appeals to me, obviously, and I'm not a girly girl, so I don't go for a beautiful dress with a waist, with a full skirt. That's not my feeling. I'm always looking for something a little bit more tricky, something a bit more edgy. So I can't say that my whole experience compared with X years ago is different or better now, because it just depends on if the piece sings to me.
Yeah.
So I'm not looking necessarily to augment my wardrobe with something from a particular era. If it's standing in front of me and waving its arms and saying, I'm for you, then that's for me. I never see any 1920s, that's for sure. It's just not around.
Yeah.
Because they're so delicate, I just don't see them. And at one stage I was looking for the classic Hong Kong beaded cardigan, and I couldn't find it anywhere.
Really?
So I think it just goes in waves where somebody gets a great load in and you need to be there on the day or not.
Exactly. It's all sort of cosmic in that sense.
It is.
The stars align and it's meant to be, much like you were talking about those purchases in Paris before. That was definitely meant to be. Beyond your mother, who was your style icon as you were growing up and who is your style icon now?
So I don't suppose we can say Humphrey Bogart because I can't look like Bogie.
I think you can say that. It doesn't matter.
From age 11, just totally in love with him and besotted with that, the whole era. Film noir, so the femme fatale. I loved her. Fantastic hat with a little bit of veiling, a gorgeous tailored jacket with a nipped-in waist, so we're moving into the 40s, a little bit of a peplum, fabulous shoes with a little bit of a platform. So those women, those bad girls, I loved that style. Louise Brooks, certainly, from the 1920s, just forevermore. Doesn't matter how old I am or how much my taste may change in certain things. She is also always an icon in terms of style. Marlene Dietrich, I find absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
Ridiculous, fantastic feathered hats and her man tailoring.
Mm.
I think that is just so exceptional and impeccable. So they're people from back then. Again, I struggle today with who do I think is a great fashion or design or style icon today. I think Michelle Yao, who was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and she's in a film that's about to come out at the moment for which she's been highly praised. She's a stylish, elegant woman. I think we're sort of similar age and I think she's doing it very nicely.
She's got it.
Elegant.
Oh, that's so cool. I feel like you've just answered this, but which fashion icon, dead or alive, are you desperate to have dinner with?
Okay, this is an interesting one. I think Gaultier would be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah.
He would be ridiculously mad, I hope. But for someone who is no longer with us, Elsa Schiaparelli.
Oh, yeah.
She was so individual, playing with surrealism in her fashion. You know, she did the fantastic hat with the shoe on top of it. She did the gloves that looked like hands. Pull the glove on and you've got fingernails and painted nails. She had the lobster dress. She had a dress that had trapunto quilting that looked like a skeleton, so it looked like your bones were on the outside. And this is a woman with no formal training who draped fabric around herself. So she famously went to an event draped in fabric and held together with a pin. And as the evening went on, she began to unravel.
Oh, wow.
And she and Chanel were rivals. She called Chanel that milliner. Chanel called her that Italian artist who makes dresses.
Oh, my God.
Apparently, one night they were at a costume ball or party. Schiaparelli came in dressed as a tree. And Chanel said, you know, let's dance. So she was dancing, moving all over through the floor, and steered her towards a chandelier filled with candles, set her on fire.
Oh, that's vicious.
Isn't it?
I can't believe that. Wow.
So throwing water and drinks on Schiaparelli to put her out, and she just hit her stride.
Oh.
So I think she's unique. She's a distinctive, wonderful designer. I mean, the label is still going to today, but of course it's not her.
No.
She's pretty damn special. You know, she would collaborate with Dali. She would collaborate with Jean Comte. Exceptional.
It's funny, you were talking about little finds at vintage markets. I went to a vintage market recently in Melbourne. It was the National Trust Vintage Fair, and the queue was like off the charts. It was over an hour long. It was really sunny. We were standing in the blaring sunlight. I was a bit hungover, admittedly. I was not prepared for that kind of wait in the sun. And then you go in, it's total chaos. And I really didn't find anything. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I just went through that for nothing. And then just before the counter, I saw a little Schiaparelli box. And I was like, that's mine. Grabbed it, took it to the counter. And the girl who was serving me, she was so sweet. She must have been about like 14. She was so young. She goes, oh, there's no price tag, so you can just have it for $5. And then I look inside and it's the original beautiful blood red outside.
Shocking pink.
Hot, like shocking pink tissue paper. And the daintiest little 1930s handkerchief. It's so divine. And I was like, I can't believe it. Well, that was meant to be.
It was meant to be.
We'll suffer for vintage. So if you could live in any other era or place, when/where would that be?
1920s New York. Thank you very much.
Fab.
As someone who had some means, I'd have to be a little bit well off.
Yes.
It just looks like the most interesting time. And also my other love, which is Art Deco. So you've got, you know, 1929, the Chrysler Building is springing up. And on the edge of, we're in Prohibition. So, of course, I'm in one of those clubs drinking my drinks out of a teacup, of course. I just love the whole feeling of that hedonistic, crazy time, if you had the means. I think that would be just stunning. And a really, really creative time where artists were doing incredible things that hadn't been done before. I think that would be super.
Yeah. It's definitely got an energy that I think still permeates New York today.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that moment planted something. I've only been to New York once, but I couldn't believe going through the galleries there, that 20s mood in the modern sections of the galleries. And I sort of felt annoyed that we hadn't had exposure to that particular era and style in Australia. I think it's very Anglo here, like it's in sort of English, British kind of lens. But I was like, wow, and you could really feel it. So I want to be there with you. That sounds great. And a book you should read is City of Girls by Elizabeth Gilbert, which is actually set in the 30s, but it really captures that mood. I really recommend it. It's a great novel.
Yeah, it was such an important time, not only for architecture, but the whole decorative arts.
Yeah.
And also going back to, well, I could have been in Paris in 1925 too for the opening of the Grand Exposition where Art Deco was introduced to the world. But, you know, you have your Cartier cigarette case with a fantastic deco design and your handbag and your earrings, everything would be we deco.
Yes. Well, tell me more about the deco as well, because you obviously have like a real passion for it. Mm. Where did that kind of begin for you, and how is it sort of in your life?
It's taken over my life. I think because the movies that I grew up with, so I'm looking at life through a lens of black and white movies.
Mm.
Also, my mum was really fascinated by Erte. And she had, in the 80s, she bought a lot of his, there's a whole wall in her home of beautiful Erte prints, screen prints, or lithographs. And so Erte is the epitome of this, you know, 20s deco elegance. So it starts there. And then every time we go overseas, because we were selling our label in New York and LA and Chicago, those cities are very, very much preserve their deco heritage. So you would go into an antique store and there would be something there that was way beyond your means, but a beautiful example of Art Deco, a beautifully shaped decanter or something like that that you couldn't really take home. So I just kept being drawn to them. And it's interesting, when I look at my own library of books, of which there are thousands, there are books on that I started collecting when I was a teenager on Art Deco typography, Art Deco design shapes that you could cut out and use for something yourself. So that was always there. And then fast forward to being asked by the Art Gallery Society if I would like to lead a tour to Shanghai as an Art Deco tour.
Wow.
And going back in time, being this East meets West examination of Shanghai, and then looking at China's imperial past with Beijing. And so I started for the Art Gallery Society through Renaissance tours, doing Art Deco Shanghai, Art Deco New York tours, Cuba. And Cuba has the most amazing Art Deco buildings.
Yeah.
Wellington, New Zealand, we did an Art Deco Wellington. And then we did Hong Kong, but Hong Kong's not terribly Art Deco, but there was the most amazing Art Deco exhibition on there.
Oh, great.
So during the pandemic, we switched and we started exploring Art Deco in our own city. So Art Deco Sydney CBD and Art Deco Potts Point in Sydney.
Yeah.
It's become this thing that I do, and I just adore the era. I love the sleekness of the design, the geometry, the purity of the shapes. The lines are just so very beautiful.
Oh, it's so, you're making me like want to go explore more deco now. You're obviously very passionate. Where is your favorite place to shop for vintage nowadays? Is there a specific store or online forum or something like that?
There's an online, which is some, they're not quite vintage. They are what you would call, I don't like the word secondhand, pre-loved.
Yeah, pre-loved.
And I've been buying on this site that I found, and it's based in Singapore.
Right.
And they say, you know, you can consign your goods as well. I thought, oh, maybe I would do that. And you look at the fine print and it says, if you live in Singapore. So,
yeah.
And I get the impression that the garments of the mainly designer have been owned and worn once or not at all.
Wow.
By lovely, spoilt Singapore ladies who buy it and think, oh, I don't want that anymore, and they just consign it. So I've got some fantastic two Vivian Tam dresses, amazing.
Amazing.
I got some Miyake, and one of the Miyake tops was Art Deco.
Wow.
Swirls on it, look like a little bit like a Sonia Delaunay print.
Oh, fantastic.
I've been shopping there online, and that was pandemic driven. So I got my Miyake fix there. No Gaultier, sadly. And if I'm in Paris, I will always go to the Marché aux Puces, the big flea market.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Just in case. Well, when you remember the name of that store, I'll put it in the show notes as well.
Yes.
If I'm allowed to give away your secret.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so why do you love vintage, and why do you think more people should wear more vintage?
I think it's about looking individual.
Yes.
Just not looking like everybody else. Not so when somebody walks past and go, oh, yeah, okay, that was the Balenciaga from three years ago, or the ripoff that Balenciaga influenced fast fashion across the board. Now, I'm not anti-fast fashion for a basic.
Yes.
It is what is it. It is. You know, you want a white t-shirt, you don't need to buy a vintage white t-shirt. You can buy one at Uniqlo. And it's a staple. I just love the idea that you can piece things together and never look the same as someone else.
Yeah.
I'm very big on that. Like the whole Kardashian thing where I see gorgeous young ladies with their long, straight, parted in the middle, black hair and the drawn-on eyebrows. It's not for me. I'm never going to go down that road. I've never really been a trend follower in that way. And while I have a lot of designer pieces in my wardrobe, I love Yohji Yamamoto, fantastic 1980s Yamamoto design I've got that actually makes me look a bit like a hunchback. It's almost like you're wearing a parachute on your back and you reach into this little hole in the back of the top and you pull of the jacket and you pull it out and you've got this big excess bit of fabric that makes a flower at the back.
Oh, wow.
It's insane. Really insane. And I took a group to Adelaide one year and there was a fashion exhibition on, and I made a point of putting in my suitcase for that tour designers that were featured in that exhibition. Now tomorrow we're going to see Yohji Yamamoto, and here's one now, or you're going to see Gaultier, or you're going to see Westwood or whomever. I like being able to refer to my wardrobe in that way as well, if I'm sharing information on a talk or something like that.
It just seems to me like you're so passionate about design.
Yes.
In general. And I think that's really like comes across in the way you dress and present yourself and the way you live and what you do and everything else. So tell us what's coming up for you this year. I know that you're doing a tour in Europe. Is that right?
In November, if all the stars are aligned.
Yes.
We are going to Prague, Brussels, and Paris. And the theme is Art Nouveau and the Belle Époque. Got a little bit before Art Deco this time because these cities are so full of wonderful Art Nouveau architecture. And a little bit of deco thrown in because these cities do also have some Art Deco. So we'll be looking at the architecture, but also the idea with these tours is you don't stand there and say, please note the corners on the second floor. It's about the feeling and the design and why the architect or the sculptor that worked with the architect on the decorative elements of the building, why it looks that way and how we can see the key elements of that particular movement, blah, blah. But then we go shopping and we look at, in Paris, for instance, we will go to my favourite great flea market. So that just let everybody run loose. It's the end of the tour. Just run loose and experience this amazing place. And it's like those markets are like a stylist dream. You walk in and some of them are very higgledy-piggledy and it make your nose twitch when you walk in. But others are just so beautifully styled. They even say no photos. Are you kidding? Very inspiring. And the other thing that we're working on and have been working on, trying to get off the ground but with delayed because of what's been going on in the world for the last couple of years, is a new TV show.
Oh my God.
We're getting there. So coming soon, and it's called Antiques Down Under.
How exciting.
Yeah, go looking for beautiful, interesting collections and fascinating people who have passion for things that are not made yesterday.
Wow. Oh, fabulous. And what channel will that be on?
It should be on 9Gem. So we're working towards that now.
Right.
We're getting there.
Oh, great. And everyone can follow Claudia on at Claudia Chanshaw. Is that correct?
Yes, on Insta.
Yes, that's on Instagram. Perfect. Thank you so much, Claudia. I really loved chatting to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlotte. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Thank you so much, Claudia, for being so generous and telling us all about your wardrobe and your vintage journey. I'm sure many of you will feel really inspired by Claudia's knowledge and her fabulous sense of style. Each week, I'm going to end the podcast with a bit of a vintage tip. It might be to do with the clothes or vintage in general. I used to do this when I did my IGTV videos on my Shea Charlotte like shop Instagram. And I thought I'd carry it on into the podcast. So this week, my vintage tip for you is to read a book from an era that you're getting really obsessed with. Now, in my case, I've been reading Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, which I believe was published in 1926. It was the mid-1920s in any case. It's by Anita Loos. It obviously became a really famous film in the 50s. But I just randomly kind of felt inspired to buy an old copy of it and read it. And I'll tell you what, it is so fabulous. It's so funny and quite risque, actually. And I did a little bit of research on it, and I have a feeling it might have even been the best-selling book of that year, and bet F. Scott Fitzgerald. Don't quote me on that. I think it was slightly neck and neck, but anyway, I'm really enjoying it. And Anita Loos, the author, what a woman. She was the most extraordinary writer. She wrote so many films, so many scripts. She was a big part of early Hollywood. And she also wrote books in her later years, but I have a feeling Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, it was like an earlier book of hers, and it was based on a column she was writing for Harper's Bazaar. Anyway, it just evokes a sense of nostalgia in me, and it's a fun, frothy little book, and I'm really enjoying it. So I recommend reading that or another book, but I think sometimes when we look to the past and looking for like something to read or watch, we sort of feel like we have to do it in a sort of serious way. At least I've felt like this. And this is like a fun, naughty little novel. It's not particularly serious or literary or anything like that. Although it's actually quite cleverly written. You'll find out if you read it as well. Thank you so much for listening. This podcast is in its early stages, so if there's any feedback, feel free to DM me at ShayCharPod, that's ChezCharPod, or you can leave a review as well, which apparently really helps. So if you could do that, that would be amazing. And yeah, I'll talk to you guys next week. Thank you so much. The Shay Charlotte podcast was presented and co-produced by me, Charlotte Dallison, and co-produced and edited by Shay McKenzie of Jaunty Productions.